Next argument we heard from the same venues, but although we're not in recess, the court is going to just briefly pause just to reconstitute itself.
The next matter on the calendar is Dvorak. Am I pronouncing that name correctly?
I think it's Dvorak.
Dvorak. I'm going to write that down. All right, and Jodofsky versus City of Madison. We're conducting this hearing today by interactive television, and so could I sort of take roll here before we get started? Is Appellant's counsel present? And you're not showing up. I know what you look like, and I don't see you here, Mr. Mack. Can you just say a few more words, and let's see if the ITV picks you up.
543210.
There we go. All right, and you're in Wilmer, correct?
I am.
Okay, and representing both appellants.
I am.
All right, thank you. And for the respondent.
Yes, good afternoon, Your Honor. This is Patrick Arneson, counsel for respondent, City of Madison.
And you're across the street here, is that right?
I am, Your Honor. I come right over, but they had to come to this building.
Nope, that's the way the rules are, and so that's the way we're going to do it. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is John Rodenberg. I'm presiding this afternoon. With me are Judges Johnson and Jessen, and we're going to proceed with this oral argument. Appellant will have 15 minutes for principal argument, respondent the same, and then appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if the appellant wishes to use that time. As you begin your comments, state your name so that we have that for the recorded record when we go back and refer to that later and identify the party that you represent. Mr. Mack.
Yes, Your Honor. John Mack for appellants. May it please the court, I am going to divide my time into two issues. The first will be negligence on the part of the city, and particularly vicarious negligence on the part of Mr. Vandahar. And the second part will deal with official immunity. Now, on page 18, ADD 18 as well, the conclusions of law of the court are set out. And what is perhaps most interesting about these conclusions are two that are absent. There is no conclusion that the city had official immunity, and there is no conclusion that probable proximate cause was lacking. Now, this court could use Brecht versus Schramm, presumably, to make a determination that the court really meant to conclude that there was official immunity, because if you look on page 26E, the court discusses it in its memorandum, even though it doesn't find it in its conclusion. Therefore, to be on the safe side, I will make the argument with respect to the lack of official immunity as well as the lack of negligence.
Mr. Mack, before you do that, I'm wondering about your interpretation of the order with respect to whether the immunity was intended by the district court to apply to all four negligence claims or only the last negligence claim.
I take it from reading the memorandum that the court meant it to apply to all four of them. Certainly, the one that I consider to be the strongest of the negligence claims is Mr. Vandahar. And I think official immunity would apply definitely to the determination of the city with regard to the construction and the inspection of the system, so I'm not going to waste my time on that. But I think that he meant official immunity to apply to Mr. Van der Haar as well.
And then if I could follow up on that, thank you for that answer. In the second part of your brief, where you are challenging the district court's analysis of negligence issues, which of the four negligence claims are you concerned with there in that part of your brief? Well, brief point two of your brief raises two major issues, and Roman numeral two begins on page 13 of your appellant's brief. It runs through the page 19. I'm just wondering which of the negligence claims are you concerned with in that part of your brief?
I'm concerned with Mr. Van der Haar's negligence in seeing that there was a major flooding problem, seeing that the ballpark was flooded, seeing that the streets were flooded, seeing that all three pumps were working, if anything, overtime, and then taking no action and going back home to bed. Indeed, one of the things that I think is essential here when looking at negligence is comparing what Mr. Van der Haar did with what Mr. Bruin did. If you take a look at page 8 of my initial brief, there is a good deal of discussion quoting from the court as to what Mr. Bruin did. However, Mr. Bruin, excuse me, I'm sorry, it should have been ADD 8, not page 8. Mr. Bruin took substantial action. He got four pipes. He pumped out sewers. He looked at six manholes and saw that the covers were off on each, pumped them, and then did substantial work to make sure that the waters were going down. None of these things were done by Mr. Van der Haar. Mr. Van der Haar had a duty to monitor the system to make sure it wasn't overloaded. He had every reason to believe it was overloaded. He had a duty to ensure that there was no flooding, and the city had already received at least 4 inches, probably more, of rain in the space of 2 or 3 hours. This is not a general duty. Consider, for example, if this had been a private sewer system, so we don't have an immunity problem at all. A private sewer operator working for a company would surely be negligent by refusing to do anything other than, oh, it looks fine, spend 20 minutes there, not even look at the streets, knowing that the ballpark was completely flooded, knowing that many of the areas that he had come by from his house were flooded, and knowing that the pumps were working at full capacity, perhaps overtime, and his own meter indicated that it was at least 3 and maybe 5 inches over flood stage. Mr. Van der Haar had notice of conditions likely to produce flooding. He said it is not his job to babysit. He has a duty to inspect more than just the plant to see if there's a flood. He was alerted to possible flooding as early as 4 a.m. 3 a.m. He didn't even answer the telephone. If water was entering one basement, it was likely entering all the other basements. He said, and the judge relied on this fairly strongly, that he didn't have an operator's manual. Well, why not? He has elaborate equipment. He has elaborate gauges. He has an elaborate system. He should have one. There is a duty on the part of person in his position to stay informed. He should know the ordinance. He should have a duty to upgrade himself with respect to what he is supposed to do. As I indicated before, when the right man came along with the right job, he did what was supposed to have been done in the first place.
So, Mr. Mack, it's your position that he had a duty that was ministerial, correct? And the definition of a ministerial duty is, I think, if I remember correctly, a duty where a certain action is absolute, certain, and imperative, or something like that. So, what, I mean, what? But I mean, what exactly should he have done, and when? And
okay, first of all, he should have gone down the streets to make sure that manhole covers were not being blown away, that there was not flooding in the streets, the system was not overloaded. He should have checked to make sure once he saw that it was 13 inches above normal stage, that none of the people affected in the area were having obvious flooding problems into their houses or into their garages. That would be simple to correct. You take, for example, a walk down the street, if you can stand the weather, have a flashlight in your hands and see visibly whether there is being flooding. That, frankly, a 10-year-old boy could do. And I'd like to go into the second part of this because you're really addressing, I think, the issue of official immunity a little bit more than you're addressing negligence in a case like that.
You're right, and I apologize if my question was not responsive to your argument. But
first thing to notice is that the cases tend to go all over the place on immunity. The language that you take is indeed cited in another in a case. That's true on ministerial duties. But then we go to the Larson versus Independent School District 314 case, and that talks about discretion is not simply a matter of having a plan or any of that. Discretion is simply to do a duck job right. The job was simple and definite. Take a look at the Williams case. It does not matter whether or not Mr. Vandahar was negligent for the purposes of this issue. The question of immunity is whether protecting the sort of job Mr. Vandahar had from criticism furthers the policy of official immunity, and it doesn't. Take a look at the cases which are really strong for official immunity. The big one, of course, is police. Police have to make split-second decisions. They have to either live or die by those decisions. Therefore, we give them a great deal of deference. Furthermore, they have a position which is immediately protective of the government. Another sort of job which gets quite a bit of official immunity protection is welfare. The people who work in the welfare offices, and the reason they do is something that simply wouldn't apply to a maintenance-type job. Namely, they'd be getting sued four times a week. So we want to protect the people, including the people who we might call manual workers, whose actions are of the sort that they really could benefit from the protection of the law. Here we have what I call a gratuitous benefit, because how often is this kind of situation that involved Mr. Vandahar going to come up? You might have one or two major floods a year, and why does he have the deserved protection, unlike a police officer? His job, like every other job, involves a little bit of danger, but is really pretty ministerial. I'm not even sure, Judge Johnson, when I read Larson and I read some of the other cases involved here, that they're consistent. They just don't seem to be establishing a hard and fast rule, and Larson pretty much says, we know that this is a mess and that it's very hard to figure out. So what our lodestar ought to be, I suggest, when we're dealing with cases of immunity is, one, is the person doing the kind of job that we really want to protect from the lawsuits and the decisions he made? Two, is this the kind of job that, if it were in the private sector, would have no particular reason to protect? And three, is this the kind of thing that we want to tell the person who has the immunity that he's safe? And I think we want to tell that to policemen, and to some extent we want to tell it to welfare officials, and of course we want to tell it to politicians. The kind of person we don't want to tell it to, though, is the truck driver, the driver of a vehicle that might be owned by the city, and I submit in this case a utilities person. Public utility director is unlikely to make split-second decisions. He's not likely to have to balance trade-offs like welfare workers or like politicians. He's not likely to suffer a barrage of suits like police officers and welfare workers would without immunity. His work is much more analogous to private sector employment like a lineman or a road construction person. How is the threat of a life of a lawsuit going to deter a utility worker? Otherwise, official immunity, frankly, would overrule the Minnesota Statute 466.02, which is a general rule establishing liability for a municipality's torts. Frankly, if we extend the exception for official immunity, the exception would swallow the rule. Thank you.
Mr. Mack, if there is a ministerial duty, is it necessary for you or for us to point to a particular source of the duty, such as a written policy or perhaps even an unwritten policy that clearly communicates to the official, this is what you must do in this circumstance? And if so, I mean, what is the source in this case of what you said he should do, should have done, I should say?
City government for about 30 years, and we never told our maintenance person how to do his job. We told him what to do. And I think that that's the way most councils would operate. He's supposed to know his job. We hire him. I don't know how to work a pump. He does, or he's supposed to. I don't know when flooding has occurred. It's up to him to know that. So I think the answer to that is no, with all respect.
What about industry standards, or perhaps certain codes or things that are written for wastewater engineers or something of that sort?
Like, say, a manual that he doesn't have. I think that that's relevant. One of the things that I'll be honest bothered me a little bit about this case is some expert testimony on the part of both parties here would have been helpful. But in the absence of that, there's more evidence of negligence, and the court should be reversed.
I would like to ask one more question, and I'm going to take the liberty as presiding judge to extend your time to answer it. Now I want to revert back to the negligence discussion, the second part of your brief. What is the standard of review that we ought to apply as we review the district court's determination that in none of the four respects charged was the defendant negligent?
Well, I think the answer to that, frankly, I would concede that in at least two of those regards, the court was right. I think focusing on the Vandahar thing, where I think the court was wrong. I think the standard here is clearly erroneous, but it's a little bit different as applied in this case, because I think that the deference we give to a district court is in findings of fact. And frankly, looking through the facts as found by the judge, as there should have been more than enough basis for the judge to find negligence. So in this case, while there's still an erroneous standard, and there's still deference to the lower court, not as much as is due to this court as would normally be the case.
Could I follow up on that,
sure,
Judge Rodenberg, just to clarify? So it would be helpful for me, Mr. Mack, because we have four claims that are identified on the first page of the district court's order, and you've said that you're not challenging the findings or conclusions on two of them. Could you identify those two by number and then also tell us by number which ones you are challenging?
Site that you're reading.
The addendum page 1, the first page of the district court's order, in the first paragraph, the court identifies the four causes of actions and describes them first, second, third, fourth. I'm taking that as...
Okay. Second, I'm challenging. That's the essence of it. A little of that schleps over into number one. I am not challenging number three, third. I am sort of challenging number four, but the essence of what I'm challenging is number two, and I think there's a fair amount of overlap between number two and number four.
Okay, thank you.
So let me try to distill what I think was your answer. So the real claim is that the record does not support the district court's finding of no negligence with respect to reasonably monitoring, operating, and maintaining the sewage disposal facility.
That's the essence of it.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes on rebuttal. Mr. Arneson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I am Patrick Arneson. I represent respondent City of Madison in this matter. I think it's important to start by stressing that after about 7.5 hours of trial and hearing 11 witnesses testify, examining all the evidence, the district court rendered 28 pages of findings and conclusions that were fully supported by the evidence and consistent with the law here. And what the district court found, in a nutshell, is that the City of Madison was not negligent in failing to prevent a sewer backup in an appellant's home that resulted from a rainfall event so severe that it's classified as a once every 50 to 100 years event. So, That's what the situation was. It was a very unusual event. The city had taken adequate measures before the event by spending $14.5 million upgrading its entire sewer system, basically, and it took adequate measures during the event itself, which gets into more of the issues that appellants are actually talking about in this case. And I do want to, clarify or lend my own conclusion as to what's at issue in appeal here. I think Judge Rosenberg, you're correct in settling on count number two of plaintiff's complaint, which was that second basis the district court looked at for negligence.
Well, to be clear, I wasn't trying to settle on count two. I was just trying to distill what Mr. Mack was settling on.
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, that is really the only basis of negligence that appears to be at issue on appeal. If you look at the notice of appeal and appellant's brief, it is only that count that's really being discussed. So the city would submit that that is the only basis that this court has needs to look at in determining whether or not the district court abused its considerable discretion in finding no negligence. And then, obviously, we have the official immunity issue as well. But with the negligence issue, I could go into why the evidence shows that the city was not negligent in any way relating to the sewer backup. I'm not going to go through all of that because a lot of that took place before the sewer backup itself. And what appellants are focusing on is the activities of Mr. Vonderhaar, who was the supervisor of the wastewater treatment facility. So I do want to address what he did. If the court wants any discussion about what the city at large did, other issues, I'm happy to go into that. But
let me ask you, Mr. Arneson, the same question that I asked Mr. Mack, which is that as we review the findings of the district court and then its determination that your client was not negligent, how ought we to review and what standard ought we to apply to the findings themselves and then the determination of no negligence?
Your Honor, I cited that in my brief, but what it comes down to ultimately is abuse of discretion for the district court's conclusion regarding negligence. For the district court's application of law to fact, then that perhaps is maybe different, but the city believes it's an abuse of discretion standard here on the negligence aspect of the appeal. So what Mr. Vonderhaar did, Your Honor, was respond immediately to the first notice that he received as the evidence showed, on the morning of the sewer backup, which
Was there one call to which he did not respond?
Your Honor, there's an allegation that there was such a call, but the district court found after listening to the testimony that there was not a previous call. He found that the testimony was more, that he gave more weight to the testimony that Mr. Vondahart did not receive an earlier call. And which is consistent with the facts, because as soon as his phone rang from the automatic dial-out system, the SCADA system, S-C-A-D-A, from the wastewater treatment facility, he picked up that call immediately and went to the facility. And when he got to the facility, then his duty, if really the only ministerial duty we could say, and I'm bleeding over into official duty, but really the only ministerial duty we can say he had at that point in time was to respond to this alarm. And he did respond to the alarm. He went to the wastewater treatment facility, looked at the monitor to find out what part of the facility had triggered this alarm, saw it was the wet well, which is essentially a big holding tank where the wastewater initially comes into the wastewater treatment facility. He went there and saw that the level of wastewater in that wet well was higher than the normal level by about 1.2 feet. And at that point in time, he also noticed that all three pumps connected to that wet well were operating at 100% capacity. Now, Mr. Vondahart knew from prior experience that the way these pumps work is, as the level of the wet well rises, the first pump turns on if it's not already on, and then it'll speed up or pump harder as the water continues to increase. If the water further increases, the second pump will come into play, and finally the third pump. And by the time he got to the wastewater treatment facility, all three pumps were working, but the level in the wet well was not rising any higher. If it had been rising higher and he had done nothing, then this would be a different case, perhaps.
How high could it have risen? What was the top height of the walls?
That's not an evidence, Your Honor, and I don't actually know. What is an evidence was he was asked if it was either he was asked about 10 feet or I think he was asked about 15 feet. He's asked if the level was 15 feet in the wet well, would that be a high level? Would that be unusual? And he said, yes, that'd be a very high level. So that suggests to me that it would go at least 10 or 15 feet in there. But as to exactly how high it is, I can't tell you.
And when he saw it, it was 6 feet high. Is that right?
6.2 feet was the measurement, Your Honor. Okay. And that was as high as it got.
And he watched it for some period of time, as I recall the record. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. He was there for approximately a half hour monitoring the situation. And when it did not rise any higher, with all three pumps in operating at capacity, that told him, based on his prior experience, there's not going to be an issue, because he had seen that exact scenario play out before, where there's severe rainfall, all three pumps come into full operation, and there's no sewer backup. That's what he had seen before. That's what he knew. So he had nothing further to do at that point based on his experience.
Isn't the critical... And tell me where I'm wrong, and I'm sure Mr. Mack will kind of address this too. Isn't the critical factual finding, or at least implicit finding by the district court, that Mr. Vondahart, when he's making that decision, 4 to 4:20 a.m., not to put portable pumps into operation, that he had no knowledge of sewer backups at that point? So doesn't that make what the district court's finding, or at least implicit finding about that he didn't receive this phone call, important and kind of entitled to our deference?
That was important, Your Honor, absolutely, because if he had knowledge of a sewer backup and, again, did nothing further, then this would be a different case. As it turns out, the evidence showed that once the city did, in fact, receive notice of a sewer backup around 6 a.m., they immediately sprung into action with these portable pumps, and those pumps were effective pretty quickly at drawing down the sewage in Appellant's basement. So yes, Your Honor, the fact that there was no known sewer backup at 4 a.m. is very important, and that was a big factor in Mr. Vonderhaar's decision making. So we're getting into some official immunity. I guess I'd want to go into that and comment on it some more. But before I do that, does the court have any further questions about negligence in general, or want to explore that?
It seems not.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. So with official immunity, as the court is aware, there needs to be a ministerial duty, which, as Judge Dotson was talking about, is a definite imperative duty that requires the city employee to take specific action based on specific circumstances. And there was no such duty for him to do any of the additional measures that appellants have talked about. The one that they discuss in their briefs is the portable pumps, alleging, as Judge Jessen was just talking about, that Mr. Vonderhaar should have immediately used portable pumps to start bypassing the sewer system when he was notified of this high water alarm at 4 a.m. Well, there was no ministerial duty for him to do that. There was no duty that anyone or anything had put out or communicated to him that whenever the level of wastewater in the sweat well gets above 5 feet, you must immediately start bypassing the sewer system. It was a truly measured last resort to bypass the sewer system because, as the evidence shows, what that involved was taking pumps, sticking these hoses from the pumps down into the sewer main through a manhole, and pumping that raw sewage up and out onto the ground in the city. That's obviously something the city doesn't want to do unless it absolutely has to do it. And prior experience had shown Mr. Vonderhaar that the level of wastewater in the sweat well can get above 5 feet. It can cause all three pumps to go into 100% operation and not cause any sewer backup to occur. He had seen that, as a matter of fact, that it happened. So his first step is not to put these portable pumps into operation to bypass the sewer system. There was absolutely no ministerial duty for him to do that. Similarly, there's no ministerial duty for him to go around and check on other residences at that time in the morning to wake up everyone in town and find out if they have any sewage in their basement. He had not received notice that anyone had sewage in their basement at that time. There's no evidence in the record that he had any ministerial duty to do any of these additional measures. As I indicated before, really his only ministerial duty was to respond to this alarm at the wastewater treatment facility, and he did comply with that duty. Even if he had not complied with some ministerial duty, the court if he does comply with ministerial duty, he also has to not act willfully or maliciously. It appears appellants are not even contesting that aspect of the official immunity analysis, so I don't really need to go into that other than say that there was no evidence that there's any willful or malicious act by Mr. Vonderhaar or any city employee in this case. I did want to comment on a couple of aspects of official immunity that came up during appellant's argument. One was the discussion about how some of these official immunity cases revolve around police officers, how they have to make split-second life or death decisions. I just want to point out or remind the court that there are official immunity cases where the courts have found official immunity where there is no life or death situation. There's no requirement in the law that there has to be an emergency for official immunity to apply. There are plenty of cases where there was an emergency, but that's not a requirement under the law. But even if it were, this was arguably an emergency, not a life or death emergency, but a wastewater emergency, a sewage emergency, a rainwater emergency. And there are cases cases that have found applied official immunity to this precise type of situation. I know for sure there's a case, I think it's an unpublished case, Northley versus Maple Lake, which the city has cited, that has really this precise set of facts where there was a sewage backup as a result of a severe rainwater event, and the city officials were given official immunity for reacting to that severe rainfall event and sewage backup the way they did. And in that case, like this one, there was no ministerial duty for them to do anything differently than they had done in that case. And that's really why the city is entitled to official immunity here. Does the city, before I close up, I'm almost out of time, does the court have any further questions about official immunity?
It appears not.
Okay. I thank the court for the time and just ask that the court affirm on both grounds here. First, that the district court did not abuse its discretion in considering all this evidence and finding that the city was not negligent in how it responded to this severe rainfall event. And secondly, that the district court did not err in determining that the city was entitled to vicarious official immunity based on the actions of its city officials. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mack, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you wish to use that time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd first like to challenge the logic of a respondent with regard to the fact that seeing that the water wasn't rising any higher was a reason for him to go home and think that there was no problem. The problem is, how do we know that it wasn't higher earlier, and why don't we, and how do we know that it wasn't flooding now? That's where he should have used his head, gone and inspected further, because the damage could already have been done. The fact that further damage or further water rising in and of itself means nothing. Now, counsel also indicated that Mr. Vandahar had seen that same situation before. Again, the evidence contradicts that because, as counsel pointed out, this was a 50 or 100 year flood and Madison had never seen anything like this before. Therefore, Mr. Vandahar, who had been Public Works Superintendent for 22 years, had never seen anything like this before. I'm pointing out the major duty that Mr. Vandahar had initially was a duty to inspect, and he had plenty of reason to think that that duty had fallen upon him. You had a ballpark which was flooded. He saw many flooded areas. Now, counsel pointed out that there are many cases where official immunity has been applied, whether it wasn't an emergency situation or a life-threatening situation. That's true, but there are also plenty of cases where the government is held liable in non-emergency situations. For example, on pages 5, 6, and 7, I cite Larson, I cite Williams versus Kane, I cite Silver versus the City of Minneapolis, and I cite the Hansen case. Important in the Larson case is the case held that when a public employee does not or fails to take action when he should have, he is not exercising discretionary judgment protected by the doctrine. I grant that, frankly, the doctrine of official immunity tends to go all over the place, but it should not be extended to cases like this because it swallows the statute. Thank you.
Thank you. We thank both of counsel for your briefing and argument. The matter is submitted, and we'll issue our decision within 90 days of today. That's the end of our calendar for today, and so we are in recess.